Hello and welcome to Dynasty As They Want to Be, a podcast where we drill into every episode of the iconic 1980s television series Dynasty. I'm your host, Derek J. Lang, and with me is my co-host and husband, Kyler K. Jafari.
Here we are.
Well, did we just discover like a delightful new snack before recording?
I mean, I'm not Catholic, so I don't have any basis for comparison.
What happened was I dropped a cracker in Kyler's martini, and he quickly fished it out and ate it, to my surprise. And then you said it was actually kind of tasty.
It's like that whole wine and crackers Catholic ritual thing, you know? It's like it's just missing the cheese.
I think this is going to be a pretty crazy episode because we already had you eating a cracker out of a martini glass and then a literal spit take when we were kind of going back and forth about what we should talk about at the beginning of the episode, and I suggested patio furniture because we've been buying patio furniture today. And you spit your martini out and had to wipe it up.
Well, I think it's important to highlight that most people use the spit take as a sort of reference linguistically and almost never seriously. This might have been like a real genuine spit take.
Yeah, and it wasn't like a spraying spit take. It was more of like a spittoon kind of like onto the table spit take.
I had to get the extra absorbent Bounty paper towels.
So, but now do we actually talk about shopping for patio furniture, or are we just going to talk about spit takes over the years?
Well, since this is the only official real spit take I've ever had in my life, I don't know how they... I would have anything else to say about it other than that's now I know why it's so funny. Like, I think we've lived in this meta world where spit takes are just supposed to be funny because they're funny, but it's actually funny when it's for real.
Well, it's that whole thing like stepping on a banana peel. Like, yeah, everybody says that's funny and it's like a cartoon.
Now, I can't wait to actually
step on my first banana peel and
break my hip bone.
Bingo.
That's going to be hilarity for days.
Well, I'm actually like afraid. So BTW, obviously we're drinking martinis as we're recording this week's episode. I'm like afraid to keep drinking mine because I'm afraid I'm going to spit it out.
You're going to like ruin the electronic equipment?
Yeah, we've got like hundreds and well, just hundreds of dollars of equipment here to record this podcast.
No return on this investment.
No, we can't afford this. But no, we're still drinking. So,
well, we were buying patio furniture, I thought. Which was also under the influence of a martini, I believe. And
yeah, the best way to buy patio furniture is to get really drunk and then just order it online, which is how I do my best shopping.
Pick and click and ship that shit.
Ooh, I like that. Did you just come up with that yourself?
No, it's like a fortune cookie I got at the Hunan restaurant last week.
Olay.
Sure. But it turns out that buying cushions for patio furniture is a whole other side racket.
Is a huge fucking troll. That's what it is. So we bought the patio furniture, which doesn't come with the cushions, which is fine. We'll custom make our cushions and get the color and the welting and the foam density that we want, honey. Well, yeah, then we went and priced it out and we're like, oh my God, we're going to pay more for the cushions than we are for the actual fucking patio furniture.
Yeah, this whole topic is like Dynasty levels of gay. It's so ridiculous.
I know. Just when you thought we couldn't be bougie enough, now we're literally devoting minutes of our podcast to talking about patio furniture. But we can't.
Spit-taking gin martinis, picking out sunbrella fabrics for our goddamn patio furniture. It's bad.
We're not relevant at all. Yes.
Like
more people are listening to the podcast, though, and from around the world.
Well, I'm so sorry they had to walk in on this. Like, let me pick up my dirty underthings and make the bed first.
Yeah, you guys, the newcomers. It's better than this, okay? We're not at our best this week, and we
God,
understand
really?
That.
I feel like that's a continuing bumper sticker that we're never going to live up to.
It gets better?
Yeah. Maybe? Well, I guess we'll find out.
I've been doing a deep dive into the analytics, and like we're huge in Minneapolis, which I can't wrap my head around. Like, we have a lot of listeners in Minneapolis, so... Everybody out there in the Minneapolis, yeah, I know you guys don't really call it that. Hello from Dynasty As They Want to Be.
Isn't that like that band, like Big in Portland or something?
Big in Portland?
Yeah, Big in Tulsa. I don't know. It's
Big Sky Country.
Big in somewhere. No,
isn't the band that did the song Big Sky Country, isn't their name Big Sky Country?
No, you're thinking The Big Country, and it's In a Big Country is the song.
That's so fucked up. And why didn't
they... No, it's genius. Are you kidding me? Like, they threw away their whole legacy on the band name and the song at one.
They're like, we're going to be a one-hit wonder, so we're going to go all in.
We're going to name the band, name, the song, probably the album. Do you think the album was probably called that, too? I don't know.
It probably was. I should look it up.
It's kind of a hot song, though, and maybe we should link to it, because, like, every now and then I think about that song and the video, BT Dubs, and...
I always want to do that song at karaoke.
It really makes me want to, like, brush my teeth, like, all the way, you know?
I don't know. I think people know that song. It was a big hit in the 80s.
No, that's one of those songs that, like, everybody kind of knows, but nobody, like, inherently knows. And then when it comes on that one time ever, you're like, oh, my God, yes, I totally know this song.
But yeah.
There's a lot of those songs, though, like, where it was sort of a one-hit wonder at the time, but, like, it's not even an... It's not even wondrous. Like, nobody thinks about these songs. And then, like, suddenly you hear it and you're like, oh, yeah.
But that's the power of music, honey, is that when you hear that, you're transported back to that time and you remember it and you love it and you're living for it, even though it's not, like, in the zeitgeist ever. So it's cool. Anyway, to bring it back to patio furniture, so we were trying to figure out what color we wanted to order these goddamn fucking expensive cushions, and we both settled on yellow, which I think
I didn't settle. I just wanted yellow, and that was the instinct, was yellow.
Well, I think the instinct was yellow because the Carrington Mansion's patio furniture is yellow. At least that's
why I've been brainwashed by all these seasons of Dynasty.
It's only the second season, honey, so.
But this is only the third time I've seen it.
Oh, that's right. Well, it's my first. But anyway, we're ordering yellow patio furniture, everybody.
Get
excited.
With white welting.
Yeah, with white welting. What is it, white welting on the episodes?
Yeah, and it's also in, like, that classic white pipe, that PVC pipe pool furniture.
Yeah.
Remember that stuff?
Anyway, let's take a break and get into this week's episode, because if we keep talking about patio furniture, I'm going to need, like, 19.
We're going to lose everybody and ourselves and our minds.
Yeah, including all of the listeners in Minneapolis.
Sorry.
Love you guys. We'll be right back. Welcome back.
I mean, this episode's called The Hearing, which, like all of the titles of these episodes, is kind of a non sequitur in some ways, if not even a red herring.
Well, I know it's supposed to be about Blake's, you know, Crime Stoppers hearing, but it also makes me think, like, oh, are we going to be, like, listening in for something special? No, not really. It's just called
also, it's a little bit like he can't see, so all he can do is hear, I guess.
Right, but then that's not really relevant.
It doesn't really
because
pan out
the
either.
Beginning of the episode, he almost falls down the goddamn steps if it wasn't for Jeff saving him yet again.
Everybody's favorite house mooch, Jeff. So, I don't know. I think we start with Dr. Toscani, because he's sort of this pivot point in this whole episode. By the way, this episode in general, I think, is one of my favorite episodes of this whole episode, this whole season so far.
Are you kidding me?
Yeah.
I'm going to spit my martini out.
No, the pacing, and there's, like, some hot shots. Camera
well, the
work,
I agree. The cinematography is on point.
Which we need to cite examples, because we can't just sit here and gush and, you know, just be fanboys. But anyway... But we'll get to that. My thing with this episode, though, is, like, Dr. Nick Toscani, normally I cannot stand this asshole, and I don't think that this episode is going to change my mind about him, but I'm sort of sympathizing with him in this one, because, like, all these, like, women are, like, throwing themselves at him, and I mean, you've got Fallon, who's, like, for whatever reason, she just keeps sacrificing all of her female
dignity.
Powers, and, well, we could call that dignity, sure. And like, doing it for Dr. Nick, who, like, clearly does not care. And we've already established before that he calls the shots in that cheap side relationship. And then, like, you have Alexis shows up, also campaigning for Fallon, her daughter.
Well, yeah, and she books a fucking appointment. She's, like, going to pay to hang out with Dr. Nicholas Toscani. So she, like, clearly...
Well, as her bucks, as she says.
Right.
Think it over, Doctor. My daughter has possibilities.
So does every human being.
Every human being is not due to inherit a fortune one day. Would you really find that so hard to take?
No. That doesn't mean her mother can buy me as a filler for her Christmas stocking.
Fallon doesn't believe in Santa Claus, Doctor.
Yeah, it's so weird that she would go to these lengths. And I know that you're a little questionable.
I'm just questioning it. I'm sure there's something there. I'm really assuming that the writing is just on point here, because why else would Alexis be showing up?
Okay, so here's
the
way...
I would think that Alexis would want to undermine the relationship so that Dr. Nick will end up with Crystal and blow the whole Carrington Mansion to smithereens, but no.
No, that's a good point. I mean, I do think it's weird because she saw in the last episode into his eyes and she realized right away that he's a nefarious character, which he is. He's got this sort of side angle he's
got. And that's really to Alexis's credit. I mean, she knows one when she sees one.
Yeah, which I was like totally clapping for. But now this week she's like doing everything she can to get her daughter and Nick together. So it seems like she's kind of taken a step back. So the only way that I can kind of rationalize it in my head is that if Nick is taken away from Crystal, then Alexis wins? Question mark? I don't know. Maybe my theory doesn't pan out.
That's not terrible. That makes more sense than like just random chaos and nihilism, which is what I was assuming.
I kind of think there's also a long game that Alexis
there
is playing.
There must be.
And I think that he's just a piece of the puzzle, a knight, a pawn, not a pawn, but, you know, one of those, like, pieces that's not the king or the queen. What's the other ones besides the knight?
Well, there's a rook.
The rook. Yeah, maybe Dr. Nick is the
rook. Dr. Nick is not a rook, though.
Well, he's got crooked teeth.
Oh, boy.
The one thing I did like about Dr. Nick this episode is his sleepy acting. You know how like some of these actors are good with drunk acting.
I do love some good method sleepy acting.
Yeah, he did it really well when Fallon calls him in the middle of the night after she wakes up from a sex dream.
See, now like your phone would just be on D&D and you wouldn't even know.
You up? That's basically what this conversation was.
I mean, this is a little bit booty call as well, for sure.
Oh, yeah. If he would have said, come on over, she would have like, you know,
gotten in the doom buggy
naked in
no panties.
Yeah, I think she was naked under those sheets because it seemed like she wasn't wearing anything, and we have confirmation that her and Jeff
well she's
are
in full
not...
makeup, of course, though.
Oh, obviously. You think Pamela Sue Martin's gonna show up on screen without makeup on? Get the fuck out of here. We did get confirmation that her and Jeff are not sleeping in the same room. Jeff is sleeping naked in another room. I think it's Steven's old room. The bed seems like familiar.
Which is also a little creepy because it's now like her estranged husband, Jeff, is now like the little baby brother in the other room kind of thing. Like, so
the whole thing is so dysfunctional.
Well, this, yes, it's dysfunctional a la Crystal and Blake. Like, they've established this whole household example of like unhappily married couples who are sleeping in separate beds. And, you know,
everybody's got their own bed. I think Sammy Joe is still sleeping with Steven, which is ironic because, you know, he's a former homosexual.
He's, what do they call them? Gays?
Gays.
Yeah. So, well, okay. So this is interesting about Fallon and Jeff. Like, I think the last episode and this episode, she's like trying to get all in his pants. But it's not clear on screen. But
no,
it's
she's
like,
trying in this episode too. She goes like licks his shoulder or something.
No, but I'm saying the effort clearly here is, it's the same thing. It's all a subterfuge. Like, she doesn't really want Jeff.
She's never wanted Jeff.
She thinks she can establish the one household where the married couple is sleeping in bed together versus Crystal and Blake, and that's like her whole motivation here, because again, she's going to deliver the child to Blake, even though like that's her father, which totally creepy. So like there's all these things that like Fallon is like trying to fulfill in her own psychological I don't know. It's a screwed up world. It's mixed up and crazy.
No, the levels of creepiness here know no bounds. I mean, she's fucking a guy that she thinks her stepmother is fucking, and her stepmother is still married to her father. And then there's all this baby stuff, and Crystal gets involved in that when they're redecorating the nursery. And, you know, obviously Fallon wants no part of it. So she tells Crystal, you choose the wallpaper and the carriage and stuff. And it's like, hello, she just had a miscarriage and is, you know, emotionally unhinged. And you think that's like a responsible thing to say? No. And then, you know, yeah, they're doing the same guy. And then it's not a classy situation. Well, the only classy person here is Alexis.
What I like about all of this, though, is like the mixed up Carrington menage. Like, you, again, you have Blake and Crystal sleeping in separate beds. Blake's even like said as much as like, you can only do one thing for me. I don't need your sympathy. I don't need you to be some martyr. I just need you to be in my bed. And then you have like Fallon and Jeff, like kind of reenacting the same thing on a lower level, less exciting, but still the same idea. Yeah, I like that Crystal gets stuck with picking out the wallpaper and the drapes or what, you know, like she's decorating the nursery. So it's not even her own child. And she's like having to like, you know, pick out the nursery, you know, decor. It's like this whole like topsy-turvy upside down household. And that's kind of like, it kind of like comes together in a strange way with Sammy Joe and Steven, who like have no sense being together and yet are the one couple, to your point, that are actually sharing a bed and
a vagina and a penis.
Yeah.
Totally ironic considering, you know, his sexuality. I loved Sammy Joe this episode. Heather Locklear, I think, has... It just took her a little while to...
She's so hateable. Her character is just like,
Well, like, she needed direction, right? Because clearly they cast her to be the T and the A on this show. And it took the writers, it took Heather Locklear, it took everybody a few episodes to kind of feel everything out. But I think we're headed in the right direction here. I think that Heather Locklear... likes, I mean, we know she's good at playing that bitch because she did it on Melrose Place.
Oh, she's a total shit show.
She's just being this prolific gold digger. And I love the fact that she's going behind Steven's back and she's getting credit and she's signing up for those credit card deals.
She's not digging for gold. She's, you know, legging for letters of credit. Yeah. Like, oh, and then, yes, then we get the whole shopping for furs thing.
The fur scene.
Yeah. Like, okay. So this is my problem. This is exhibit B in my argument about the problems of demonstrating Denver, Colorado, circa 1981. You can only have lunch in one place if you've got two nickels to rub together. It's the St. Denis Club. And same thing goes for your furrier. Apparently, there's only one place in town. And of course, Alexis and Sammy Joe are going to cross paths. Like they've, like, there's 7 days in a week and 24 hours in a day, right? And of course, they just happen to be... I don't know. What did we ever establish the name of this fur boutique?
It's called like Moliere Fur.
Something throwaway. But yeah, I mean, we like that.
Well,
but.
Are you sitting down? Because I think I noticed something about the fur store. I think the fur store set is
the St. Denis Club set. Uh-huh. Yeah.
They just redressed it.
They just like moved a couple walls around, took out some bank heads. Yeah. It's the same.
Bye to
like,
the hostess stand. Egregious. Hello to some minks.
Green carpet. Yeah. It's clearly the St. Denis set. But that's fine because I don't think we ever go back to this fur shop again. So should they have spent the bucks, as Alexis would say? No, probably not.
Okay, so you picked up what I was putting down. But you know who is not picking up what she's putting down is Alexis. She saw Sammy Joe trying to go for that mink and put it on Carrington credit, which I guess when you're in Denver, they don't check your
credit.
You
just throw a name around.
Yeah, they just look at your ID and they're like, oh, Carrington, okay, cool. You automatically have an 800 credit score or whatever credit scores were in 1982. And she's just trying to get that mink. And I love this whole kind of like pretty woman situation where the sales girl's like, are you sure you don't want the fox? And Sammy Joe's like, I want the mink. And the sales girl's like, it's a little old for you.
I like that one. It's a rather expensive fur. And I'd say this fox has a much more youthful quality.
I think it's tacky. I like the mink. That is mink.
You don't feel it's a little old for you?
Old? Or you think I don't have the money?
Well, you know, we have a rather strict policy about credit and returns, miss.
My name happens to be Mrs. Stephen Carrington. I'm not used to haggling over what suits me.
I don't know. You're a fashion expert. Is Fox younger than
me? My research into the world of fur really only extends to episodes of The Price is Right from 1978 through 1987. So I can only say that I don't really know.
$1, Bob.
Yeah.
This is clearly going to come bite her in the ass. Like, she is reaching for the stars, and everybody is telling her, like, quit trying to spend all of that money. Like, it's not going to work. But she thinks, well, because she has this little secret about Fallon, that that's going to just give her the key to the fucking city, the Mile High City.
I just like that they're like, you know, this could just be obvious gold digging. But they take it to another level. Like, she's in bed with a letter of credit. She's going to the fur place. Like, you know, she's really dialing it up. So we're making this very soap operatic.
It was kind of set up last week, but we really see this play out. And I think we were both kind of right. This insane Senate committee that Blake and Andy Laird, the attorney, kind of put together to go at Logan Rinewood turns out to be a complete and utter shit show.
Yeah, it's a sham.
What were they thinking?
Well, I don't want to like dissect moment by moment, but I do want to understand, like,
wait, you do realize that's the point of this podcast, right? We're dissecting every moment of every episode of Dynasty.
Oh, okay. Well, I'm gonna go pour another drink. I'll be back. No, but seriously, like, so do we think that the Senate was bought out by this Logan Rinewood mysterious figure in the background?
No.
So they just didn't take any of this very seriously?
No, they're level-headed politicians. Wait, what?
Oh, my God. I mean, I know this is 1981, but are you sure?
I think it was a better time, the Reagan era. No, I just think it was dumb, and it's Blake, again, being egotistical and thinking that he's better than everybody else.
Well, I'm trying to figure out, are they like trying to like make Blake this bigger than life character? And that's why this is supposed to be national news that there's a Senate hearing, but then it's closed doors. Or is this just like what an egomaniac Blake is, that he thinks this is such a big deal and it's really not?
The latter. Okay. I think the latter for sure. I think he was able to call in favors to get this circus organized, but then once it came time to actually like have the elephants come out and the clowns and whatever, everybody was like, no, I'm not here for this.
It's just like burnt caramel popcorn and, you know, some guy on stilts.
Yeah, and a lot of elephant dung everywhere. My. Yeah. Wow, we really played that metaphor all the way to the end, didn't we?
I mean, I want to squeeze it for one more, but it just it's not been that good so far, so why keep going?
Yeah, so I think, you know, he was able to pull it together, and then Logan Rinewood's attorney comes in and puts the punctuation at the end of that sentence because he's like, well, Logan Rinewood doesn't have any fucking thing to do with Denver, so peace out, mic drop, bye. Like,
that was the other thing. My issue with this whole scenario is this business was transacted technically in Nevada, right? This is when the check was exchanged for, I don't know, 49% of the football team or whatever.
Yes.
This is like 5 episodes ago, which I do appreciate the fact that this show is asking you to remember something that you may or may not have watched, you know, yeah, weeks ago. And so there's that. That's fine. But is that really what this boils down to? And that's not what I thought this like Senate committee was all about. I thought this was about an IED exploding limousine situation and Blake going blind, and this guy's responsible.
No.
So this is all just like supposed to undermine this other guy's business, and that's the way that Blake's going to get back at Logan Rinewood, or?
No. Well, okay. So, two counterpoints to that. The first is that Blake's whole thing, and it's been reiterated. It was reiterated three times, actually. Like, I'm going to get him in the court of public opinion, right? So it wasn't so much of what the Senate committee could actually do. It was the fact that it was going to get publicity and he was going to drag Logan Rinewood out into the sunlight and everybody could see that he was draining that swamp.
But see, this...
But then,
this
wait. But then,
I have a point there, but yes, continue.
Okay, but I had 2 points and I prefaced that I was going to make 2 points. So, but that is completely null and void because the Senate committee said no publicity, no press is allowed. Which is kind of weird because there should always be publicity or there should always be a pool reporter or something allowed in a public hearing. Anyway, the second point is that, well, fuck, I forgot my second point. What's your point?
Well, my point was really, this is another great example of how Alexis always outdoes Blake. And she doesn't always outdo herself. She's not always a winner, and I always like to preface that. However, she did that whole shenanigans with the suntan lotion and the, you know, the paid off paparazzo guy.
Well, that's
in
because
Rome.
She was dealing with the media, the tabloid.
Well,
media.
That's what Blake thinks he's going to do here. He's like, oh, I'm going to have this like court of public opinion, and he doesn't get it. And it's like a total blow up in his face. And then he like, then they're like, oh, well, Logan Rinewood sent his emissary who's going to tell you that we didn't even do business in Colorado and we have no stake in this game and your trial is moot.
Well, and I love the senator of color. I do like there are a lot of like minor characters of color. So we're at least seeing like something
governmental,
that's non-white.
Yes, bureaucratic positions. It's very interesting.
Yeah, way. But I love that that guy says, well, wait a minute. You're calling this guy shady, but then didn't you sell 40?
They actually used the word shady.
I loved it.
Like old white boring guy using the word shady. And the black guy, of course. But like everybody like is very clearly establishment using that word in 1981.
Rinewood's chief hatchet man was here in Denver.
Do you have proof of that, Mr. Carrington?
He came to see me. To hint at what might happen to me if I didn't sell my football team to Rinewood. On his terms.
And your response was?
I refused. Not because of the money, but to keep shady types like Rinewood from controlling a clean American sport.
Shady types, Mr. Carrington? Could you be more specific?
If a duck is shady, then you call it shady, right? That's the saying?
If a duck wears lipstick and fans itself, it's shady.
Yeah. I can see Denver from my front porch. Anyway, I love the fact that he says, well, if these are unsavory characters, why did you sell 49% of your fucking football team to them? And then, you know, Blake and Andy Laird, the attorney, are like, murmur. Well, we can't talk about that.
Yeah, they play the poker hand.
And it's like, you didn't think of that question before you came here? They were so ill-prepared.
I think I said this while we were watching it. Like, this is my problem whenever, like, Dynasty tries to handle business affairs. And I will count this as business affairs because these are things that are sort of
governmental,
logical,
business.
And they're involved in, like,
procedural.
Money decisions. Yes. Everything falls apart because the writing does not have a handle on that side of it. And it doesn't matter because nobody's here for that anyway. We're all here for the clothes and the cigarettes and the champagne. And like, so like as soon as we could just like get this, like whatever this thing is with Blake and Logan Rinewood out of the way, the better.
Well, I would kind of be okay with it. I'm fine with them introducing a little bit of government here and there. I mean, I'm looking forward to all kinds of hearings that will be happening soon in our government, especially one. But so it could be good, but it's not campy. It's not interesting. It's not factual. And it makes everybody look like dumb and a big waste of time.
Well, there was one campy moment.
Oh, when he gets his eyesight back?
Yeah, which is sort of like the final trope we have to discuss here. I mean, right?
Mm. Yeah. No, we have to talk about Blake's blindness.
Well, apparently, you know, because this is hysterical blindness, which this is an interesting term. I think I've heard of my favorite film of all time, period, the end, is Who's Afraid of Virginia Woolf? And you get this like bit about hysterical pregnancy. Uh-huh. So I don't know if this is all just like a bit of like pseudoscience, you know, or folk medicine where hysterical, quote unquote, gets applied to things that are not really what they medically are. I don't know. So Blake is hysterically
blind. We
here
at Dynasty as They Want to Be do not provide any actual medical advice. So please consult your doctor if you have any medical questions.
I just needed to put that disclaimer in there so people didn't start coming for us.
You just don't know.
Well, we have more people listening to the podcast now, especially in Minneapolis.
Maybe some doctors that could give better advice than we are, clearly. But anyway. God.
I hope doctors have better things to do than listen to this podcast.
I think we have better things to do, but here we are anyway. And Blake has got hysterical blindness, quote unquote. I don't know what the hell that really means, but I think it just sort of suggests that it's selective. It's just like Steven's, you know, gay amnesia. Like, you can just decide suddenly I'm not gay anymore.
Well, here's the thing. So, okay, he's at the hearing. He starts hearing a synthesizer. He can start making out the faces of the senators. He makes out the face of Dr. Nick Toscani, which, BTW, why did he invite Nick Toscani to the hearing and then he doesn't even like talk to him there? He just like leaves. Anyway, not worth actually discussing.
No, that's a totally dropped thread, and that is truly not good writing.
Bad writing.
Why did he ask the... I mean, unless this is like, are we like writing the Dickens novel here where like
the only thing
it
I
all
can
comes back like 12 chapters
wanted,
later. I don't know.
The only thing I can think is that they wanted Blake to see somebody he knew because he may not know these senators. I don't know. Anyway, he gets so incensed because this stupid ass kangaroo court doesn't go the way that he wants. And then he starts being able to see. And then later on, he gets this letter that makes him mad. So my question is he able to see because he's so mad?
I think so, because that's like Blake's like real true power throughout this whole show is like his anger.
Yeah.
It's like he's like so over the top, ridiculously pissed off at moments. Like that's like his superpower.
Yeah, because you've always been talking about this season how Blake is kind of cooled. He was nice to Claudia. He's been kind of nice to Alexis here and there. So maybe because he's been chilling out a little bit, that's what caused the blindness. So now he realizes he needs to be a big bitch again, and that's what's going to cause him to see. My other theory is...
I like your other theory more. It's the glasses. It's the Disco Daddy glasses. That's the whole problem this last three episodes. Yeah.
So anyway, let's just get to the end of the episode. So... I don't know. You explain this crazy theory because I'm not sure I completely understand it. This strategy that Alexis and Fallon have cooked up concerning Crystal and Nick and a kidnapping letter or what?
No,
is...
it's a la a kidnapping letter. It's the old classic like trope of like cutting out headlines from magazines and, you know, writing cryptic messages.
Yeah, kidnapping.
So letter. That nobody can like identify the handwriting, I guess. I don't know. It's all very sloppy and don't think too hard about it.
Oh, too late. So Alexis did that and then Fallon intercepted it so she could deliver it to Blake, even though he can't see, right? Am I explaining this correctly?
Yes, because Fallon knew after speaking with Alexis that there was going to be this, you know,
bomb drop
at the front door. So she intercepts the letter, which is a classic, you know, that's a great little plot thing.
Yeah, I mean, now we would just send a text from, you know, an anonymous number or something, but back then you would have to snip 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 the latest Vogue and then send it in.
Well, and you'd also have to get Joseph the malicious majordomo out of your way so that you get it, not him, which is pointed up later because he comes into the room with Blake after Fallon leaves after having read Blake the letter, and he's like, do you want me to read it for you again? AKA, I want to know what's in that letter. Read it again. No, you want to read it for yourself.
Well, yeah, of course.
Joseph. But okay, so fine. But yeah, this letter gets intercepted, and I think it's all sort of It's a little bit predictable, right? But I do like the way that it's sort of worded like a ransom note, though, even though it's just like basically saying your wife's cheating on you.
Well, that's because Alexis is an artist and she has a flair for the dramatic.
She do.
But it is interesting that Fallon has such a difficult time delivering this to her father, because this is kind of the first time we've seen her sort of cross him nefarious against
him. She's being asked to choose sides. It was interesting. She hands him the letter and the envelope, and if she really didn't want him to have it, she could have just handed him the envelope. But and now I'm just like overthinking these things. Like,
yeah, I mean, what are they going to do? A fucking DNA test on this thing? Who cares?
And supposedly he's blind, though. He wouldn't know what she handed him.
But again, he goes into such a rage when she reads this, you know, kidnapping letter to him, and he's able to suddenly see it. And my God, it's such a dramatic moment. You would have acted like he was blind his entire life. And I'm thinking, wait a minute, wasn't he just blind the last episode? Why is this like a miraculous turning point for us?
Well, this just goes back to your theory. Like at the end of the scene, and he, you know, removes the glasses and can see now. And
oh yeah, my theory is that he could have actually seen this whole time, but then he's just wearing sunglasses. So whoopsie, if he hadn't been wearing sunglasses, he could have actually seen.
I mean, yeah, if you're wearing sunglasses at night indoors, you're probably not going to see much of anything anywhere, anytime.
It's true.
So I don't know. But look, at the end of the day, though, I think this is like a really well done episode, and it takes sort of all of this corny bullshit that we've just been like dissecting and packages it in a really nice way. And there's just some moments.
Yeah, you know? There's those kind of like Hitchcockian moments, like when Fallon intercepts the letter and she's walking down the hallway and Joseph is in the background.
That's an iconic moment. That might be one of the finest moments in early Dynasty photography.
It really is a beautifully composed shot.
And it's almost kind of like throwaway. And it's like, and you wonder like, well, some, I don't know who the director was. I don't even know if it's one of the regular directors, but like this was like a moment that was clearly inspired. And it's just for, you know, 12 seconds on your screen.
Yeah, on TV. You know? It could have been on a movie. The other thing, though, as a counterpoint to that, is there's some weird shots with Alexis where the film quality looks weird. Like when she's in the office with Dr.
I like
Nick.
Your argument that she was asking for
an Instagram filter.
Yeah, she needed that soft focus or something. I
mean, it's not for most of the scene, so it makes me feel like they ran out of the usual film stock that they use, and they just thought, just roll this up.
I think some Dynasty archaeologist like probably knows about that stuff, and I don't know how to get to the bottom of it. There is some,
I did a little bit of research into it, and I couldn't put my finger on it, but maybe we need to dig a little deeper. But first, we need to pick our lurks of the week. Well, I'm picking Crystal Carrington second week in a row as my look of the week. That little cape navy blue number.
No, I hate this look.
Are you kidding me?
This was like the anti look of the week for me.
Anti look of the week.
I hate it with that's the terrible embroidered leaf thing up
it
the center.
It was gorgeous. No. It was so regal. It looked like something that some member of the royal family could have worn. And then she's wearing that sort of. It's okay. Well, let me just explain what
this is. Church lady fashion. No.
Are you kidding me? She's wearing thigh high boots. You don't wear thigh high boots to the church.
I don't know what church you've been to, but
so she's wearing this beautiful kind of navy blue, or is it purple? I don't know. I'm a little colorblind.
It's blue. You're colorblind. I don't know if I call it navy, but it's like a marine blue. Sure.
Yeah, it's a darker blue, and it's a cape, and then there's like a matching dress, and then she's got like the thigh high gray boot with it, and then the purse. It's like a clutch kind of purse.
No, I cannot deal with the embroidered leaf detail up the center of the lapels. No. It's cornball. It's like bathroom wallpaper.
No, it's iconic. It's sculptural. It's regal. And she's doing her updo, which we've been fans of the way she does the updo.
I think they were really trying to make this updo happen for her because they wanted to move on from the haystacks.
Yeah, they were like, please, Linda, can we make you do something else besides them bangs?
I want to know the story there
like
because
a horse
like,
needs to go yeah, through it very, your face.
It very quickly goes back to, and then like, was that her decision? Was that their decision? I don't know. But anyway.
Somebody could write a whole book on what was happening with the hairstyling team on Dynasty.
She is wearing nude pumps, which seem to be a thing these days.
There's not a lot nude. It's like a gray. It matches the clutch purse.
Oh, sorry. I'm sorry. She's wearing knee-high, excuse me, or thigh scrunchy boots, things, whatevers.
No, the shoes are amazing. The clutch is gray. The earrings match the sort of gold clasp that goes over the cape. It's great. And then they're walking around this gorgeous sculpture garden, which I was like, where?
I think that's why you are more inclined to like what she's wearing because of the setting. I don't
the
know that
setting
the costume
does elevate
is that great.
It. I will agree. The setting does elevate it, but I still love the outfit. It's different than anything we've seen. Linda Evans looks amazing in it. It's just, it's powerful.
I think it's very pouty and ivory tower and over contemplative, and it's just typical Crystal, which is fine because that's why we like, you know, this character.
Well, anyway, boom, what is your look of the week?
My look of the week is Crystal in head to toe red in the drawing room with the decoratrice.
Wow, I didn't expect you to go there.
Yeah, no, it's turtleneck. It's, you know, gathered shoulder with a little bit of a peak to it. Not full shoulder pads. Because, again, she's not a hard woman like Alexis is, you know. And I like in this that the reds actually match from top to bottom. It's not like there's like a softer material, so the red looks different under the
light.
Yeah,
we don't talk about that enough on the show. There's a lot of these outfits where they're doing the monochromatic thing, which I think
and
was like a hot style.
Doesn't quite gel.
And
yeah,
and it's like,
and I don't know how much of that is like just they're doing a tonality thing versus they wanted it to look like one color and the lights don't show it that way. I don't know. But here I think it's like the first example, like literally so far, where they're wearing a monotone outfit and the color actually is monotone.
Uh-huh.
And again, it's with that updo that we've both
well,
you know,
and
been
I do like
on.
That because she looks good in it. And blondes, I'm a little blondy, and like red is a hard
red
color.
Red is
for
not
us.
A blonde's color. Mm-hmm. Yeah. But I think this kind of points out how red was such a nascent indicator of power dressing in the 80s. Like, I mean, red will become much more important in a few more years, but you're seeing red so much in these first, like, you know, episodes of the season on a lot of characters, not just actually on Crystal. It's interesting because she's not normally wearing red.
No. Alexis is
not really her color.
Red.
Yeah. So it's this is another look of the week that's a little more character based rather than just totally the outfit. But I think both are interesting together.
Well, and I could see that they made that choice because in the scenes that she's wearing red, she is being more forceful than she normally is. So it does
well,
kind
power,
of lend
color,
the punctuation.
Yeah, right.
Yeah. That's another episode of Dynasty as They Want to Be in the books. Kyler, thank you so much for joining me again.
I'm going to go out on the patio furniture and wallow around in some yellow sunbrella with my martini now.
Well, before you do that, let me thank also our listeners. We love you guys, whether you're in Minneapolis or whether you're in San Francisco or Los Angeles or anywhere in the world. We appreciate you listening. We do this for you guys, and let us know what you think about the podcast, your thoughts on the episodes. You can do that.
It's trash.
All across social media. We're at Nasty Podcast, NASTY Podcast. You can also leave us a review on iTunes or Stitcher or anywhere that accepts podcast reviews. Thanks for listening. I hope everybody has a great week and a great credit score, too.